Welcome to Cultivating Greatness, a podcast dedicated to all aspects and experiences of leadership in the world. The mission and purpose of this podcast is to inspire everyone to uncover, live in, lead from, and make an authentic impact on the world from their highest and best self. The premise of this podcast is that everyone is a leader, regardless of their job or position. This is Dr. Deb Horton, and I am a leadership coach. I am super excited to be speaking with Sergeant Goodchild today, founder and president of Active Healing, located in Massachusetts. We are here to talk about Sergeant's thought leadership on a healing modality called neurodevelopmental movement with regard to certain populations and neurological diagnoses with which he works. Sarge, I'm so glad you're here. Thanks for being with us today.
It's a pleasure to be on your podcast, Deb. Thank you for having me on. I'm looking forward to getting a chance to connect not just with you, but your audience as well.
Who do you work with? Who are the kinds of people or the issues that they have?
For the last 28 years, my focus has primarily been on kids, although I do also work with adults, just not in as big a number. I see a lot of kids who have attachment and bonding disorders. These are kids who are typically adopted from third world orphanages, former Soviet republics. The care that they've been given is very structured. It's given on a scheduled basis rather than on an as-needed basis. And these kids develop some very significant attachment and bonding disorders, things like reactive attachment disorder, et cetera. Mm-hmm. I work with kids on the autism spectrum. I work with kids who have sensory integration disorder, epilepsy, cerebral palsy, the full spectrum of learning disabilities, such as ADD, ADHD, dyslexia. I also have kids with large behavioral disorders. And then all of that kind of falls under the umbrella of what I refer to as brain injuries or neurological dysfunction. That's been my primary population for the last 28 years.
So autism, cerebral palsy, ADD, ADHD, other learning disorders,
dyslexia,
yeah, and attachment and bonding disorders. That's a really wide array of diagnoses. What is neurodevelopmental movement?
In neurodevelopmental movement, what we do is we leverage developmental milestones to help heal very specific areas of the brain. We're born with a very specific blueprint that takes us through a sequence. And that sequence is establishing not only a really healthy physical structure for the child, but is also responsible for stimulating very specific areas within the brain and helping the brain grow and mature. As the brain matures, each new level of maturity kind of suppresses the earlier behavioral pattern. So we have a child that's going to be able to self-regulate eventually, among other things.
Sometimes people think that once a human being has one of these problems that you've listed, that's it. That's the end of the story. And you just have to cope. But what you do is based on a different belief than that, isn't it?
It is. So I think that we talk about windows of opportunities being closed for these kids all the time. And once they've reached a certain age, that they're not going to be able to regain capability that they should have innately had. I don't believe that to be the case at all. And over my long, almost three decades of doing this, I have routinely found that we can put that worry aside. I'm a guy who really values different solutions for traditional problems. Traditionally, the healing that Americans really partake in, for the most part, are what we call passive modalities. So someone might go to a chiropractor and get adjusted, or they might go to an acupuncturist and get some acupuncture needles, or they might go to a massage therapist or a cranial sacral therapist. But those are all passive modalities where the person is more or less just lying on the table and this healing modality is being applied to them. At Active Healing, we require that you become a very active participant in your healing process. And that process in and of itself is going to be a physical process that you will be taking yourself through, or often parents are taking their child through. But it involves activities like learning how to crawl on your stomach, learning how to creep on hands and knees, and integrating reflexes and doing sensory work. So it's a very active process. What I teach parents to do is leverage very specific developmental movements and mature very early stages of the brain and allow the maturation of those specific brain areas. There are a very specific set of skills, functions that are very closely related to their neurological growth. And so we're going to focus on those. For a period of time each day, we're going to look at those functions and we're going to say, here's what we need to be focused on. Let's put a tremendous amount of emphasis on these things. And in doing so, we give our kids the opportunity to catch up with their peers. They're typically neurologically developing peers.
You have a personal story connected to this work that you do, and maybe you can use that story as an example to explain how it works.
In my case, I probably had a difficult gestational period. My mother may very well have been drinking and smoking cigarettes, and not excessively during that time, but still it was a chemical exposure that obviously we know does not benefit a developing fetus. And then at the time of my birth, because my mother had a history of miscarriages, the doctor had left very explicit instructions with his staff that he would be the only one to deliver me. But I didn't come exactly on my due date. I was like maybe 2 or 3 days earlier than anticipated. And so he wasn't immediately available to come to the hospital. And instead of allowing my mom to go into normal labor, they actually prevented her from going into push labor and waited for the doctor to arrive to the hospital, probably for a few hours anyways. And when I was delivered, I had what they call a nuchal cord. So the umbilical cord was wrapped around my neck and had created oxygen deprivation. And so I was delivered a little bit blue from lack of oxygen and a little bit floppy also from lack of oxygen. And so, you know, that was perhaps my second big insult. And then as I was developing, I would have these spontaneous little jerks. And my local pediatrician assumed that it was just an immature startle reflex, which it was not. And I was actually experiencing myoclonic seizures. Then at about the age of 4, I was exposed to some medications that tripped me into a full-blown seizure disorder, which then triggered a lot more medications. And I was on so many medications to unsuccessfully control my seizures that my eyes were practically swollen shut and my teeth couldn't come through my gums. My gums were so inflamed from my enormous amount of toxicity that you couldn't see my teeth. They were all there.
Wow.
But they were completely covered in gum.
Oh my gosh.
And I used to have to routinely go into the dentist and have my gums cut back surgically. And when they would do that, they couldn't put me on any pain medication because the amount of seizure medication I was on was so significant that it could have induced a medical coma had they put me on anything additional.
That is brutal.
So it was a very difficult childhood. I was referred to as retarded by all my classmates. I was pushed and punched and kicked and tripped. And when that wasn't happening, I was being teased by the girls and made to act like a robot. And it was a very, very difficult childhood.
It's heartbreaking.
And ultimately, this is the very abridged version of my story. But eventually, my parents found a physical therapist by the name of Art Sandler. And Art Sandler was the first person who sat my parents down and said, your son is brain injured, and all you're doing is treating the symptoms. And that is like trying to cure a cold by getting rid of a runny nose. It's never going to work. So he sat my parents down and he said, your child doesn't know how to crawl on his stomach. He doesn't know how to creep on his hands and knees. His sensory integration is a mess. He doesn't have good awareness of his body in space. He's got enormous amounts of issues with his vestibular system. et cetera. And he laid out kind of all of the challenges that I was facing. And then he explained to my parents how they could take me back through the developmental process that I hadn't had the benefit of, and they could recreate that for me. And in doing so, they could mature my brain in a very sequential way.
So what you're saying is because of that childhood, early childhood you described, you missed some of those milestones like the creeping and the crawling and some physical activities that a child normally goes through?
Precisely. As a result of being oxygen deprived at birth and having potentially other toxic exposures, both during my gestation and after, like different medications that I was exposed to, et cetera. My toxic burden, my threshold, because of the way in which I was born, because of my gestational experience, et cetera, my tolerance for toxins was lower than perhaps your child who gestated in an ideal environment without being exposed to alcohol, without being exposed to cigarettes, who didn't have the cord wrapped around their neck and wasn't delivered oxygen deprived, blue and floppy, may very well have had a much higher tolerance for different exposures that they came across. But my tolerance for that toxic burden was a lot lower. And it was noted, it should have been noted very early on when I was having myoclonic seizures, which were misdiagnosed by my pediatrician as just an immature startle reflex. The medical solution for me was, oh, look, your child's having seizures. We better put him on a ton of medications. But after I got put on all those medications, I was labeled mentally retarded, uneducable. I had mild cerebral palsy. I had autism. I certainly had severe epilepsy, some of the worst epilepsy that the doctors at Children's Hospital back in the early 70s had seen in their careers. I was put on a ton of medications. Art Sandler was the guy who sat down with my family and said, these are not the solution for your child. You need to rebuild his brain. And the only way to rebuild a brain is by taking the child through this sequential developmental process, which is intended to build the brain from the first place. And I hadn't done any of those skills because of the insults that I had acquired early in life. And so he laid out that plan. My parents went home. They put that plan into place. And within 9 or 10 months, I was completely seizure free. After years of seizure medication, not being able to control my seizures, I wasn't on any medications. And I was no longer having seizures because we were able to leverage those developmental movements to mature and build, strengthen very specific areas of my brain.
So that's incredible. The pons and the what?
Midbrain structures.
And the midbrain. And so Art Sandler mentored your parents to do, you have told me, 6 hours a day of physical routine that developed your brain.
My sister was 3 years younger than me. My brother's 4 years younger than I am. And they were both off in school. And my parents took me out of school so that my mother could pursue this program with me during those hours of the day. So 6 to 8 hours a day, I was working really hard at learning how to crawl, learning how to creep, developing my vestibular system, techniques to teach me how to become a reflexive deep breather. I had all of these different techniques. And my mom became my head educator. She was the one who taught me to read, not my classroom teacher. I actually learned how to read while hanging upside down by my feet in something that we call suspended inverted rotation.
Wow.
Which a lot of kids really, really enjoy.
Yeah. Is this the foundation then of the work that you're doing at Active Healing?
It is.
So tell us about Art Sandler.
My mother was volunteering her time for a little girl named Sarah. Her parents were very wealthy and exceptionally well connected. And little Sarah, as an infant, had drowned or was near drowning in the family pool. And they were able to resuscitate her when they surfaced her, but she was left profoundly brain injured as a result of a near drowning. And the parents, being exceptionally well connected and wealthy, were unwilling to accept what Boston Children's Hospital was giving her as a prognosis, which, in their very kind and wise words, they referred to her as a vegetable. The parents weren't willing to accept that. And so they found their way to a place in Pennsylvania that was doing the work that I currently do at Active Healing. And my mother was one of 70 volunteers that was coming into that household. And she would show up for probably a couple hours a day, maybe 2 or 3 days a week. And she would volunteer during her time slot. And then she would come home and it would be a discussion point around the dinner table. My father would come home from his job and he would ask my mother how her day had been. And she would begin telling stories about little Sarah and how Sarah was surprising the entire medical community, but especially the volunteers who were directly working with her by the strides that she was making. And my father, you know, it didn't make a lot of sense to him. My father was, as I said, a commercial real estate broker. So he was not in the medical field. He was not in a holistic field. He didn't have that as a background. And it, you know, in a lot of ways, I'm sure it did not make any sense how putting Sarah up on a massage table and taking her through these very choreographed movement patterns would help her brain recover from a near drowning. But those exercises, the encouragement of crawling and doing all of the other interventions, Sarah was making very, very strong forward progress that was unheard of by the medical community. So my father decided that he would show up and he would watch what was going on before he formed an opinion. He wanted to understand the process. He wanted to understand what my mother was doing with her free time. He wanted to see how this little girl, Sarah, was doing. He wanted to see all the volunteers. He wanted to see what was going on and experience it. And when he was done and my mother's couple of hours of volunteering were done and they went to get in the car and they went to leave, my father looked at my mother and said, what are you doing? And my mother looked back at my father and said, what do you mean? You just watched what I was doing. And he said, Martha, this family doesn't need our help. They have plenty of volunteers. Our son needs our help. And so it was shortly after that that I found myself with a physical therapist by the name of Art Sandler. So he put together a program for me and we vested a tremendous amount of time and energy into getting that program accomplished. I had a severe seizure disorder and no amount of medication that Children's had ever prescribed, combinations and changes in those medications, never were they ever to get seizure control for me. But after 10 months of doing all these exercises, I had had my last seizure and I am 52 years old and I haven't had a seizure since I was 10, maybe even 9 and a half. Somewhere between 9 and 10 was my last seizure. And I live a very physically active life. I'm more of an adrenaline sports junkie than a guy who wants to go watch a football game. If I were ever going to have a seizure, that opportunity has long passed.
That's incredible.
Can you share some results you've seen with clients?
I can. So I have a lot of different stories from a lot of different clients. I want to talk about Evelyn H. from New Hampshire. I originally saw Evelyn when she was about 17 months old, and I worked with her for about 2.5 years. Evelyn had a stroke at birth, followed by 2 seizures and a bunch of other complications. She was considered microcephalic, which means that her head was undersized and potentially not going to give her brain. You know, we obviously restrict brain development when our head is too small. And she had what's called cortical visual impairment. So that means that there's nothing wrong with the eye, but the eyes aren't seeing. So the structure of the eye is fine, but for some reason, the brain isn't able to interpret what the eye is seeing. So she had cortical visual impairment, microcephalic, stroke, and seizures at birth. That's a lot. Over the course of working with Evelyn for 2.5 years, she has developed incredible language skills. This little girl who I don't think they were expecting to be able to walk is able to run. I mean, a fully healthy, normal, typical run. She jumps from one piece of furniture in the house to the other piece of furniture in the house. And I'm not talking in a hyperactive way. I'm talking in a normal 5-year-old child kind of a way. She's able to brachiate or swing on monkey bars. She's able to walk on balance balls. She is seeing fine detail visually now. She is such a healthy, incredible young girl.
And that's
she
incredible.
Has blown away all of the doctor's expectations.
Wow.
Years ago, I worked with a little girl named Pema. Pema was adopted, internationally adopted. Pema had all the kind of classic signs of attachment and bonding disorder. I'm going way back historically, but I believe there was rage. And what happens with attachment and bonding disordered kids is they never feel like they belong. They don't feel like they belong in the family. They don't feel like they belong within the classroom. They don't feel like they belong within the community because their early childhood experiences, without going into great detail, because we could do a whole podcast on that, has set them up to feel like they're worthless and like they are solely responsible for getting what they need in life. And it leads to massive problems with control. She had huge problems with transition. She did have control issues. She did not feel bonded. She did not feel probably, I might be exaggerating a little bit, but a lot of these kids don't feel like they're worthy of love. It's very problematic.
Difficulty forming trusting relationships and trusting people, which is...
Yeah, they don't.
Yeah.
That's not within their capacity. I recently connected with her father on Facebook, maybe a couple of months ago. Pema is now studying at American University, very prestigious college, and she's getting a degree in public health.
Wow. Incredible.
What I'd like to do right now is I would just like to read to you a testimonial that Pema wrote herself as a 10-year-old without having been asked. Dear kids that are doing the neuro program, neuro is great. It helped me a lot. It helped me be in myself and slow down to where my mind and body are connected. It was really tough to keep going when I heard kids playing outside and having fun while I was on the floor, hot, tired, and ready to fall apart. But it helped me make lasting, long friendships and not bump into people by accident. I slowed down to listen to people, and people started to listen to me too. I could understand what people wanted me to do. It helped me in school a lot too. I get all A's now. Now everybody listens to me and takes my ideas into consideration instead of saying, isn't she really annoying? And don't you just want her to shut up? I did the neuro program and now people treat me like an equal instead of like a poisonous snake. Now I have lots of very good friends to joke, laugh, play, and grow up with. Thanks a billion times. Pema B, age 8 to 10, while doing the program. P.S. Keep going. You're going to finish. You're going to. It's hard for me to say. You're going to feel as if you won the lottery when you are finished.
Mm. Yeah, I get tearful when I hear that, too.
Yeah, it's an amazing. I mean, it's one of my favorite testimonials just because it wasn't asked for. She just felt compelled to write that.
Well, it helps you have a tremendous empathy and compassion for children or any human being who are struggling with these issues. This can give so many people an opening for hope and an alternative path to a life that maybe they thought was never possible for themselves or their children, just through physical exercise, just through physical movements.
But very specific physical movements.
Yes.
Right?
Like a prescription of physical movements is really what it is.
Right. We have to be organized. We have to do it in a very sequential manner. When your child goes to a traditional physical therapist or occupational therapist who have the best of intentions, they often look at your child who maybe is 5 or 6 or 7 or 12 years old, however old they are. And they say, at 5 years old, Johnny should really be up and walking. So we're going to put him in a prone stander and we're going to teach him to walk. But that is analogous to taking a kid who has just graduated high school and putting him in a postgraduate program. without allowing him to benefit from the experience of college first and undergraduate studies. If you don't trace back to the earliest step at which just this child has missed, you are missing an enormous opportunity to change the child on a global level, right?
When the moment in their development where things began to break down, as opposed to based on where they should be right now, you're going back to the beginning.
I couldn't have said it better.
That's amazing. And that's quite unique in terms of how people think about developing less developed capacities. It's really a big departure. And so the prescription of physical movements that you give to families goes back and addresses all of those activities or movements that they didn't do when they were less than 1 year old.
Exactly.
This is a pretty special, unique thing that you're doing in the world. Does anyone else do this?
There are a few. We've got myself and Betty Lamont are at this point kind of the old guard in this. There's also a place in Philadelphia that still is doing it. There are two places in Philadelphia that are still doing it. Myself and Betty Lamont would be the old guard of this. And then Betty has trained a group of women to follow in her footsteps. So that if you're counting pretty liberally, there's maybe 24 people in this country who do this type of work in what I would consider the correct fashion. Active healing has a very different set of solutions for a population of kids that seems, unfortunately, to be growing at an alarming rate.
Yeah. So that's why the work that you do is so relevant, because the number of children with what you're calling brain injuries, or where parts of the brain are not progressing sequentially as they might, is on the rise.
I'd like to end on a very positive note. And I would like to say that it was the opinion of the medical doctors that I was uneducable, mentally retarded, which hopefully I've given all of your listeners the impression is not the case. And those were their opinions, and their opinions were wrong. And I would like to make sure that all of your listeners understand never to let someone's opinion dictate their future.
Awesome. Fantastic. Thank you for that. Wonderful to be with you here today. And I'm actually looking forward to our next conversation about some of the other types of illnesses and people that you treat in other ways. So thank you so much for your time, Sarge.
Thank you for the opportunity, Deb. It's been a pleasure.
If you are interested in learning more about Sergeant Goodchild's work, please visit his website at activehealing.org. And if you're interested in learning more about my work in the area of leadership, please visit my website at cultivatinggreatness.io. Thank you for joining us today on Cultivating Greatness. I am so grateful for your interest in leading from your own highest and best self, and I'm excited for you to join us for our next podcast. If you liked this podcast, please share it with anyone who would benefit from hearing it. And please give it a 5-star rating and leave a positive review as well. Thank you, and see you next time.